that there was no discussion of the Dolphin Lee project. Interesting. The topic was a hot topic at the town meeting on Tuesday night, the question of bulldozing Beach Flats residents after we'd thought that issue had been resolved by a combination of activism and the electorate voting and putting in people who seem to be saying we aren't going to ethnically cleanse the Beach Flats area through a kind of, well, economic and ethnic cleansing and get rid of Latino people there for the more trendy shade of the day or the more trendy wallet size or whatever you will. And in fact, Scan came up with this Dolphin Lee project as a sort of, one of the things they're interested in and working on. Again, the words housing issues have always been sort of code words, particularly when they're used to substitute for civil rights issues, for doing nothing around the civil rights issues. And I know that Phil and Jane Bear, who have been on this program, particularly Phil, have talked about there being no new actions around, no new city council capital improvements or even pothole type street cleaning, street paving activity down at the Beach Flats. Sort of minimal things what they're looking for. They're not looking for a redevelopment scheme that moves out all the residents or a significant number of Hispanic residents. They're looking for some support for the people that are already there, and apparently they're not getting it. I'm going to play now because we're kind of rushing, but any callers who want to call in and talk about anything that we've been listening to so far are welcome to do so at 427-3772. Ooh, well, there's a caller now.
You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Well, I was going to call back, and I am.
Well, good.
And I'll be brief.
Go ahead.
Mr. Spitzer's comment about certain things are not very strategic. Well, what does that say? What that says is that Mr. Spitzer and apparently the entire SCAN steering committee and by default the membership has accepted power over principle as being the winning strategy.
You know, that has a nice ring to it. In fact, too nice a ring. I would normally dispute it with you, but unfortunately, I think that is substantially true in this case.
It is entrenched mediocrity, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
SCAN is essentially in the way of anything happening, of any consequence. They don't take on difficult issues. They don't do anything. They do polls. They do task forces. They parade around. They're entrenched, and they call themselves progressive.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a joke, and I bring up the issue of D.A.R. Danner going back to the mid-80s in this town, in this community. And I want to hear the SCAN steering committee address this brief statement. Danner uses position to evade felony drunk driving charges. Now, that was in 1987.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then one other one in the mid-80s was the Corinne Christensen murder and the Richard Bandler farce trial. Danner remains mute about Santa Cruz County murder and farce prosecution. Now, I've been into the Bandler file. The claim is that the missing preliminary hearing minutes were found 3 years later. Why are there no progressive flags down on that play? I think SCAN's a lot of nonsense. Where was SCAN when the DA falsified time cards in 1994?
Mm-hmm.
I think SCAN is a joke. I think this is imperative to be pointed out that in any serious issue, SCAN is not there. They are mediocre, they are entrenched mediocrity, and they have the audacity to call themselves progressive.
Well, thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Yes, you can vent on Free Radio, and I tend to agree with Bob on the issue. He's concerned about the district attorney particularly. I am noting SCAN's behavior around the sleeping ban and around the Dolphin Lee project, and on both those numbers, I find that SCAN seems to be sucking up to existing politicians or using what it considers to be strategic means, if you want to use that kind of language. I'm going to try to play for you my speech to the City Council's town meeting. I may have to do a little winding and rewinding to find it. But first, before I do that, I'm going to play for you a very good speech by activist Becky Johnson, who talked about Lou Rice, the man fasting in front of the post office for reforms at the Homeless Services Center for better food, for a drinking fountain, for more space for people to sleep. Particularly important when you consider, as I say, as we're in a town where it's illegal for people to sleep at night after 11 o'clock. Let's hear the speech.
Ralph Nader's mother was once asked, "Which child do you love the most?" And she told them. She said, "The sick one until he gets well. The small one until he gets big. Or the hurt one until he feels well." I think I'd like to talk about the City of Santa Cruz's need to care for our homeless citizens, because I believe we need to have that attitude that those citizens that we have that are most in need need our first, foremost attention. We are not unusual as a city with our homeless politics and policies. We're just as cheap, just as mean, and just as self-righteous as any other moderate-sized city with a fairly wealthy population. Our centerpiece is the Homeless Services Center, which was formed last July when the Homeless Community Resource Center and Citizens Committee for the Homeless merged. I formerly served 3 years on the Board of Directors at Citizens Committee for the Homeless. I need to tell you about Lou Rice. Lou Rice is a 51-year-old client of the Homeless Services Center. And on April 15th, he began a hunger strike for better conditions for the Santa Cruz homeless from the Homeless Services Center. He's on the steps of the Santa Cruz post office as we speak. He's been there for 20 days without food, and he has vowed to stay there until you and other citizens in our city improve the conditions at the Homeless Services Center. I'm glad to say that 4 council members have already visited Lou Rice. I'm glad to hear that. You need to act. What he is calling for are needed changes, and they're very reasonable. There are 7 things that he's calling for, but let me just name 3 very briefly. The food at the free meal is very poor quality, insufficient nutrition, not enough quantities, and there's a cleanliness problem as well. He's also asking for a drinking fountain for the 200 clients that come each day. There's no drinking fountain. They have to drink out of the mop bucket sink. And the ISSP, of course, needs to be expanded. Please visit Lou Rice on the steps and act before he loses his life because people don't care enough. Thank you.
Now 30,000 children died while some politician lied. They bust the starving kid who steals while the fat cats make their sweetheart deals on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me.
And now, as promised, a little bit about the Yugoslavian War. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, by the way, 96.3 FM. And do call in if you've got something you want to say about what we've been talking about. We give callers the prime time because I think we're here as a community radio station. But here's a very interesting conversation I had with Richard Becker, who I actually had hoped would be on one of these forums that the is being planned even tonight as I speak down at the Vets Hall at room 23 for all of you activists who want to go down there. It's open. You can check it out. But apparently some more establishment figures like Bill Monig are being considered. Nothing against Bill. I mean, you know, he's a good man. But Democratic Party people, most of them have lined up behind the Fuhrer, Clinton, the weenie-wagging bomber of the Yugoslavian people, one of our very own war criminals. And I think that we need people who are willing to criticize. And I'm hoping that Well, see what you think of Richard Becker. I thought a lot of what he had to say. I don't know if everything he says is accurate. He's written a book. He's a socialist, sounds like, part of the International Action Center, I believe it is. But here he is from the UCSC teach-out of 2 weeks ago.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Hey, John. Sure. So, your name is Richard Becker in the International Action Center. And, Richard, we're here at the end of a forum on Yugoslavia and prisoners here in the United States and elsewhere. The last question I put to you in the forum had to do with answering sort of specifics that come out of the American media, which of course none of us are necessarily qualified to do at any particular point in time. But it's important, I think, to deal with that. And you, of course, gave your response at the very closing of the argument, which is that, well, why don't you repeat it?
Well, I think there's a great deal of misinformation that's being disseminated from the Pentagon. You know, the Pentagon understands, one of the lessons that they understand from the Vietnam War is that public opinion is as important as tanks and planes and guns when it comes to fighting a war. So they spend a great deal of time now in cywar, psychological warfare and public relations and so forth. And they come up with a stream of allegations against whoever their enemy is, most of which we have found, and we've been tracking this for several years, the most outlandish ones usually turn out to be the ones that are the most untrue. But their philosophy, and we explain this through a public relations firm, have them speaking about it in the book that we wrote about NATO and the Balkans, their philosophy is create a first impression, whatever happens after that won't matter very much. So we are treated to this constant flow of material, most of which we believe is untrue, but which is aimed to shape the public opinion in order to support the air war and maybe the ground war that is to follow. And now here and there, and so what we do is we go through, we have people who work on this and go through the media and pick out the contradictions and show usually out of the same sources that in fact the allegations, the accusations that are meant to whip people up the most are not true at all. Just to give you one example, the impression is created in the media now that the vast outflow of refugees from Kosovo is because of what is called Serbian ethnic cleansing. The other day when the convoy story broke about NATO bombing, and they actually bombed four different convoys, they interviewed on the scene, NPR interviewed on the scene, and I only heard this one time, the French press agency correspondent who had been in Kosovo since the beginning of the bombing. And they said to him, well, did you talk to any of the survivors? And he said, yes, I talked to one old man. And what did he say? Had he been driven out of his home? And he said, no, the Yugoslav federal forces came to our village and said, it's too dangerous to stay here anymore. The bombing is so heavy in this part of Kosovo. So we left, and we agreed, and we were on the road heading south to an area that was safer to get out of the way of the bombing. And then they said to him, well, why? There must have been Yugoslav military vehicles in the convoy with the refugees. And he said, no, there's no sign of that at all. And he was on the scene very soon afterwards. He was on the scene the day before all the other observers got there. And he said, no, I don't see any sign of that at all, but there's bodies and body parts all around and everything. And the NPR reporter said to him by phone, well, why would NATO bomb a refugee convoy on the road? And he said, in disbelief, he said, why? Because they bomb everything that moves. So in other words, this is coming from one of the few times we've actually heard someone on the ground, a correspondent on the ground in Kosovo, working for an outside news agency. And what he's reporting, he's not reporting this is the only cause of people leaving, but he's reporting from the mouths, out of the mouths of refugees themselves, out of their own statements, that the reason that this group of refugees was on the road was because of the bombing. And the reason that they had been dislocated from their villages was because of the bombing, and that the convoys that they were part of were apparently all civilian convoys, and that the bombing of Kosovo is so massive that everything that moves in that part of Yugoslavia is attacked.
And yet, a month before the bombing, I think a lot of independent news sources report that there were 500,000 internal refugees who are Albanians. Mm-hmm. Do you dispute those sources?
Well, I think they dispute their own sources, and you know,
do you dispute
not even independent sources? No, it's not true.
How many?
All the sources
have another figure.
All the sources now of independent displaced persons. The figures that I see being used now are that there were about 260,000 internally displaced persons.
Talking Albanians or everybody?
Well, internally displaced persons, that's a good point too, because we think that the population figures that have been presented are also not true. There are, according, and I saw this late one night on C-SPAN, Julia Taft, the U.S. State Department Assistant Secretary for Refugees, saying that among the 55,000, among the 260,000 internally displaced persons were 55,000 Serbians who had been displaced from Croatia and had been relocated in Kosovo, and now because of the internal war and the bombing, this is right after the beginning of the bombing, she said that 55,000 of them had moved in across the border from Kosovo into Serbia, the other part of Serbia. There are also the Romani people who are there. There are the Montenegrins. There are the...
But the overwhelming majority are Albanians.
The majority, probably two-thirds, rather than the 90% figure we see, referred to all the time, probably about two-thirds of the population, we believe, of Kosovo were ethnically Albanians. Those who have been displaced before the war, I don't think there's any credible allegations or evidence of ethnic cleansing or genocide going on before that. There have been about 2,000 people killed in the previous year to 16 months of a civil war going on between the Kosovo Liberation Army, which is funded from the outside, funded by the from Germany and from with the support of the United States, and the Yugoslav Federal Forces. They were engaged in a secessionist war trying to take that part of Yugoslavia out of the Federation.
But the Albanians have been struggling for a decade before that against the central government, correct?
Well, there has been a struggle going on for a long time, but I think that even that struggle has been misrepresented to a large degree. For instance, it's given that 1989, the autonomy of Kosovo was revoked by the central government under Milosevic, but the one form of autonomy was revoked at that time, and I think it was a mistake to do it.
What was the significance of that before you leave that topic?
Well, that was gave a very large degree of self-government to Kosovo, within Kosovo, to its own parliament and so forth.
Took away that self-government.
Took away that parliament, but so it still was part of Serbia as a whole, and it was still represented in the Serbian parliament and so forth.
Did this have impacts on the schools and language?
But it didn't revoke language rights. That's a misconception. It did not revoke language rights, and but I just want to say this, that what we never hear about here, never hear about, is that in Kosovo, while the Kosovar Albanians are a minority within Serbia as a whole, and within Yugoslavia, within Kosovo, the area of Kosovo, the Serbians and others are minorities. And I have the articles from 1982, 1987, articles in the New York Times about the campaigns within Kosovo. These are Albanian spokespeople saying this, Kosovar Albanians saying this, that they're very concerned about the nationalists in Albania trying to ethnically cleanse Kosovo of everyone except Albanians.
And what do they mean by that?
Meaning that there was persecution, there was harassment of Serbians and of Romanis and other minorities within Kosovo by nationalists, not by the majority of the population, but by organized nationalist elements.
Albanian nationalists.
Yes, Albanian nationalists who wanted to ethnically cleanse. And this was before the term ethnic cleansing had become common parlance. You know, that came about during the 1992 Yugoslav Civil War. That term began being used, and yet they were using this term 10 years earlier in 1982. And these were Albanian leaders in Kosovo saying who were against this that was going on. So it's been, my point is that we've only gotten a part of the story here.
You associate the Albanian, and I use the phrase because I've heard it described in different articles, nonviolent leadership of the late 80s and early 90s seeking independence or the restoration of their autonomy, or I'm not sure if it was independence or just autonomy. You equate this group with, I don't know, the violence that's going on now? I mean, do you think their grievances were legitimate? What's your sense about that?
Well, I think that there were some legitimate grievances, yes. And I think that there was also a desire on a large part of the group that was, you know, not advocating violence at the time for independence. So they did not wish to enter into negotiations with the government. I think that there were problems that existed there. I think there were problems that existed all throughout Yugoslavia. This is a country of 26 different nationalities. But I don't think that Yugoslavia would have been pulled apart as a federation without the intervention of the outside powers.
Was a significant part of this problem Serbian nationalism in the central government, or do you think this was, are you suggesting this is really a propaganda curve?
Well, I think that there was nationalism from many sides.
There was Croatian nationalism, Slovenian nationalism, Bosnian Muslim nationalism, Albanian nationalism, Serbian nationalism, Macedonian nationalism. But you see, there was always nationalism.
Wasn't it Serbian nationalism that caused the revocation of the autonomy in Kosovo?
Well, see, that's where I think we have a more mixed picture than what we've gotten so far, because I think that the rise of Serbian nationalism in regard to Kosovo was also a reaction to the repression of Serbians who were a minority within Kosovo who came under attack by Albanian nationalists over a long period of time. So I think there's a Serbian nationalist element to it. I think there's also a reactive element to it. And I think we can pretty clearly document that at this point, even though, as I say, this is not something that's completely left out of the official story. But I just want to say this, that there's always been nationalism in Yugoslavia. The question is, how did they stay together as a federation? Because
I'm talking about repressive behavior, either by the central government or denying basic political rights, or outright military intervention and ethnic cleansing, which was happening.
I don't believe that there was what is called ethnic cleansing.
Either from the Albanians or from the Serbians?
Well, I think there was attempts to secure control of areas, you know, and the more nationalist elements. There was no way that the Serbians who were a minority, a relatively small minority, were going to drive out the Albanians. I think there were Albanian nationalist elements who were trying to drive out the Serbians. I think now what's happened, once the war started, I believe that once the bombing started, that the Yugoslav Federal Army also moved on the KLA forces in the country very, very, very strongly, because they looked at this as part of the NATO attack on them. And I think from an objective point of view, they're very connected.
You feel that the claims of Western news services that the villages are being ethnically cleansed is in fact false? Or do you think that is now going on?
Well, I think that you have to get...
By that I mean the elimination of all Albanians from villages, whether they're KLA members or not.
Yeah, I think that's been done for military purposes, is my opinion. That's just my opinion.
Well, you indicated in this one story you heard that at least one Albanian said to the French person that they were being moved to a safer area. They're not being asked to pick up your stuff or we're going to shoot you in the face, like the stories are coming out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's happened too. Maybe that's also happened. I don't know. I mean, I haven't been there, but I do know this, that this one story that leaked through illustrates what I think is probably a widespread phenomenon. I mean, if you bomb the hell out of a country, you're going to get a lot of refugees. And there might be other reasons that you can get refugees too, and maybe there's been forced displacement by the Yugoslav military forces. I don't doubt that that's been true in some areas. But I also think that the U.S. and NATO are deliberately letting themselves completely off the hook when really they are the main cause of the refugee crisis.
They're
manipulating the refugee crisis for their own purposes. But you know what? I got to go.
You got to go. Listen, thank you very much.
Okay,
again,
what's your name?
I'm Robert Norris.
Robert Norris. And
we've been talking to you.
You're the Robert Norris with Food Net Bombs?
Yes, sir.
Hi. Good to meet you.
Hey.
Richard Becker.
And that was Richard Becker 2 weeks ago at a sparsely attended forum on prisoners and Yugoslavia and a number of other topics, and he speaks very well on issues. One thing that concerns me and that I heard brought up at the Resource Center for Nonviolence Forum, I guess his name was Hartsog, a nonviolence person who has been working in Kosovo, is the fact that, well, what Hartsog brought up was that In Kosovo, they had a sort of a process before 1989 where schools and doctors and so forth, and, well, administrative agencies had, they had an Albanian as number one and a Serbian as number two, or the other way, but there was always sort of a pairing of Albanian and Serbs as a way of sort of balancing things, although I don't know how that left the other 24 nationalities or 25 nationalities. But that once Milosevic revoked autonomy for Kosovo in 1989, essentially all the Albanians were thrown out, and you couldn't be involved in professional organizations and schools and so forth as teachers. And it was this is an allegation he made publicly, and he is from the country in terms of having worked there for a year. He's marched in nonviolent protests with the Albanians and monitoring that back before the violence began, or the overt violence that led, escalated into the current situation, and with the NATO decision to bomb in March. So I want to see all sides on this issue, all facts come out, and I like to be very, very careful not to sort of jump on a party line. But again, it seems to me that so far it's really clear that this bombing is a big criminal mistake, and I use the word criminal, perhaps passionately, but I don't think ill-advisedly. We have an interesting. I have 4 minutes left. I'm not sure if Uncle Dennis is going to show up on time or not. But I've got an interesting article I'd like to read if he doesn't. But before I do, I'll give you a couple of brief updates. Dennis Rehm, who we talked about, a man who got a sleeping ticket about a week ago and was defended in court by Kate Wells. So he fought a sleeping ticket a week ago. He fought a fine a week ago. And he actually won this court case where his so-called failure to pay warrant was ruled inappropriate or illegal, but he was warned a new warrant would issue because there's no such thing as a failure to pay. You can't force someone with a threat of jail to pay a fine around a non-vehicular infraction. That's kind of a obscure and complex notion, or rather, arcane notion perhaps for those of you who haven't been following this. But anyway, Dennis is afraid he's going to be rearrested and his vehicle seized for he refuses to pay on conscience a sleeping ban fine of, I think it's $197 for sleeping in a vehicle. He has not been seized yet. He's fighting on, he's driving on, he's sleeping on, and we're going to be following his case. I encourage you to come on down to the Vets Hall, room 23, where we are planning, some of us, to take a stand against this crazy bombing that is blowing Yugoslavia apart. If you want some more information, again, on how to help fight the bombing, contact the Santa Cruz Coalition to Stop the Bombing at 423-1448. It looks like I was unable to, with my trap, did not catch Uncle Dennis outside. He's apparently escaped the pit trap unscathed, and he's here with his trusty earphone monitor system. So I'm going to have to vacate, sadly enough. But listen, do come back, all you faithful listeners, and some of you new listeners, if you find something that's been interesting you, to the Sunday edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides on 96.3. I kind of float around the dial occasionally. 96.3 FM, that's Free Radio Santa Cruz. It'll be Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning. We run from 11 to 1:30. You can join us then. If you got something you want to put on the air yourself, give a call to 423-4833 if it concerns homeless civil rights. Give a call to the voicemail at 427-4523, 427-4523 if you have a PSA you want to put on. And, hey, stay with Uncle Dennis for the always illuminating, densely full of information program that he carries on weekly, 8 to 10, Earth First. And don't forget the homeless. They're also a part of the environment, although they tend to be ignored there.
Earth First, homeless last?
Yes, that seems to be what some of our local environmentalists have to say, but I know, Dennis, that you don't do that. Thanks for being with us.
July 29th, 1999, it's around 8:05 in the morning, heading into the Santa Cruz County Courthouse for a hearing involving Vinnie Lombardo and James Costner. Jim Costner, both activists who were arrested by police on May 22nd on charges, I believe, of resisting arrest or interfering with an officer, because protesters were surrounding a paddy wagon, I should say a patrol wagon, not wishing to discriminate against Irish people. And this is a hearing preliminary to a trial. I believe it's a hearing to set trial. Always the first ordeal of the day is to go through the metal detector test area where there's an individual with a handheld metal detector who is running over people who have passed through the rapid scan but have not succeeded in evading its clickings. However, what's happening is that often folks with buttons, political buttons, are told to remove their buttons instead of having the officer simply remove his handheld rapiscan over the full body of the person. Hey, Mitchell. Hey, Bernard. I haven't seen anybody here yet.
Let me go in and talk a little bit.
Go in and talk?
Yeah.
Okay. We can go into the usual gauntlet. So hang with me, Bernard. Good morning. How are you doing?
Dawson.
Yeah, if I haven't got anything else on me, let me quickly give you my change.
If it says open military, we'll have to take
them off. I hate to have to remove my shirt again here. After all you have to do is run it over me to see if there's anything on there or not. Alrighty. Oh, those are my buttons. You want to just run the tape recorder. Let's try with the tape recorder and see what happens.
Okay. Sir, you need to step back.
It's these two buttons.
Yeah, you'll need to remove those.
Do you want to check me out with the Rapiscan that's handheld in order?
No, we'll need to remove the buttons.
Why can't you do it with a handheld Rapiscan?
I explained to you yesterday, sir, that we can't. Because our policy, we need to bring the buttons removed.
Well, it seems to me that I saw you doing this when I just came in. I saw you using a handheld Rapiscan.
Because you cannot determine where the metal was.
Well, I'm not clear on this.
Okay.
If
all I have to tell you is, you asked you to take them off, take them.
Yeah.
If you don't want to take them off, then you don't. You need to successfully pass going through here, or you don't
right.
want to
go. So you are insisting that each of us remove the buttons instead of when reaching the end, running your rapiscan over
correct,
them.
Sir.
Even though you do this for some people, you're not going to do it for me. Is that correct?
We don't do it for some people. It's different circumstances.
I see. Okay. I'll take off my shirt in other circumstances because I have to get into the courtroom.
Yes,
but I do object,
sir,
to this process.
Hang on.
So we made our way through the metal detector. We're standing near apartment 2, where there are four people waiting for court here in the court of Commissioner Salazar right outside. Bernard, Jim, Vinny, and Dan Hopkins. Two of these are defendants, Vinny Lombardo and Jim Costner. They are accused of obstructing an officer. And essentially what many of us view, I was one of the witnesses, as a police-instigated incident against a peaceful but noisy demonstration on May 22nd against the war in Yugoslavia. Regarding the metal detector situation, there are still three detectives over there, actually three deputies. At a long machine, which as far as I know has never, I have not heard of it finding any bombs, explosives, or significant weapons that justify the expense and humiliation of people being forced to go through this searching process when they're completely innocent. Here in the courtroom, it's guilty until proven innocent rather than the reverse. And when I made the simple request that the deputy use a handheld scanner to check me out so I didn't have to remove my shirt and all my, which has my political pins on it, he and his sergeant refused. You've heard that a few moments ago. Jim Costner and Vinny Lombardo are here for a trial setting. Is that right, Jim?
Today is a trial setting, as far as I know it, yeah.
Yeah. Jim, you're acting as your own attorney, and you have an attorney, Tony Bull.
That's correct.
And I guess I was actually discussing this with you on your late-night radio show last night, Vinny, as the foibles and problems of public pretenders, as we call them, or public defenders, as they call themselves. These are court-appointed attorneys who try to persuade their clients to do deals rather than to
fight the power.
To assert their rights.
Close to that, really.
And speaking of the devil, here comes Tony Bull, your attorney, right now.
Don't do that. You might want to rephrase that.
So, Tony Bull.
I erased that.
What's that?
I heard you got shut down.
Shut down.
Yeah.
No.
At the city council meeting?
Oh, no, it was two nights ago.
Two nights ago.
Right. Yeah, they didn't want me to talk.
Oh, you should just raise your voice.
I did, actually.
They kicked you out? What, they kicked you out?
No, they just... well, actually, for the first time, they tried to extend oral communications, but it failed on a 2-2 vote.
Oh, on two votes?
A 2-2 vote.
Robert, you should record this and witness it, but this is just because I didn't fill out the paperwork.
Huh?
Vinny's retained me to represent him.
I can't foresee any possible conflict, but I just want you to know that that's happening, and I guess have your permission. Everything that the two cases I represent you on would be, I don't think has any bearing. And of course, those confidences are remained as long as I stay alive. So, do you
until I apply him with enough liquor, of course.
Yeah, I have no conflict of interest or no moral issues whatsoever.
Okay, great. Yeah, this is a totally different thing.
Whole situation.
So, but again, nothing should ever come up with those things.
Okay, great.
So you're now attorney for both these scallywags?
No, I can't.
He's an attorney for Vinny, but he's checking the conflict of interest in terms because him and I, he's represented me before in the court of law, so there could be conflict of interest the way some of the legality works, but he's assuming that there isn't, given this particular situation.
Yeah. I mean, Vinny's situation is entirely different from
yours. Would there be a conflict of interest if you also took on Jim as a client in this case?
In this case. No, I don't think so, because our argument for Vinny is he was away. Matter of fact, I conceivably asked
the
Vinny. Not yet. I've asked Vinny if he wanted to actually ask me to have to sever the cases because Vinny was a newspaper reporter 10 feet away from the van.
Mm-hmm.
Radio reporter.
Clear on that.
Okay. Jim actually sat on the van, so they're two completely separate incidences.
But it was such a nice van to sit on.
So that's my take on it. I don't know how Jim is going to justify what he did, but I can defend Vinny.
Would you be willing to act if Jim asked you as co-counsel in this case? Because he's going in pro per.
I understand. In a more experienced attorney might be able to, but I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that to Vinny.
He can take it. He's tough. Look at him. The guy, he's a muscle guy. Oh, I understand what you're saying.
Because, I mean, frankly, in my closing arguments, I'm going to really push hard to distinguish the two.
Uh-huh.
And if I'm representing both of them, the jury's not going to have the legal acumen to do that. Whereas, as it is now, when I stand up and make my closing argument on behalf of Vinny, the jury's going to think of me. I mean, I've told you this. This is what a jury does. They find guilt or innocence based on how they believe the attorney.
It'd be better just to pay each juror $1,000. Just kidding. Listen, anything you want to add about the case you think the public should know?
No. Is this going to get broadcast, by the way?
Well,
delete the part between Jim and me, though. That has to be deleted.
Okay. I mean, I probably won't get broadcast anyway. So if you heard the part between you and Tony and Jim, forget about it. Okay, everybody? Thank you. So we're talking to Dan Hopkins. Dan, you said that you heard something rather disquieting today.
Right. I was on the bus, and I couldn't see because there were so many people, but I knew that I could see the heads of the head of this one tall activist. He's a gray-haired man that was in the Yugoslav protest, and he's often in the death penalty thing. He's kind of high hairline and has somewhat grayish hair, real tall. But anyway, and he was talking to, I believe, the bus driver. And I think the bus driver's number was 139 on his patch, but I couldn't quite sure if it was a 3 or an 8, but I think it was 139. And the driver told the activist that a hospital worker, someone had told him that a hospital worker had walked by the two police officers that shot Happy John Dine,
mm-hmm.
that the officers were actually laughing about shooting Happy. And that's all I know.
Wow. Well, we should get more specifics, but, you know, it tends to show, I think, generally the attitude, at least of some police officers. We don't know if it was the actual two who shot him, you say?
Yeah.
Officer Carey and his partner, Officer Ober.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, thank you.
And that was this morning on bus number 71 at approximately maybe 10 minutes to 8.
You need to talk maybe to the tall, gray-haired guy for more details.
Yeah, right. As soon as I see him again. Yeah.
Sounds good. So we're still waiting outside courtroom 2, Salazar's court, for the Lombardo and Cosmer hearings. Yeah. Push this off pause when he gets permission.
You have the papers off of the
Yeah.
What, they're not letting you in?
Deputy Forbes does not want me to walk forward and put the machine on the table.
so you have to take it with you.
Okay.
Okay. I'm sure John Salazar would have no problem with it. However, Deputy Forbes is taking it on himself to do this.
Secure. Okay. Oh, we're off now, right? Okay.
Deputy Forbes is superior.
No, this is recording still. Oh.
And I suppose, for the court's purposes, that also includes page 1, lines 3 and 4, James Cosner.
It doesn't.
Excuse me?
It does not.
Oh, okay. Then very well, Your Honor, I have been retained to represent Mr. Lombardo, who is present. It's set for a setting at this time.
That's correct.
I'm not representing Mr. Cosner. I'm just representing Mr. Lombardo.
Pre-trial conference on the matter?
Yes, Your Honor. The people would request approximately 1 month. We're still conducting some investigation on this matter.
September the 2nd or August the 26th?
September 2nd is first day of school. September 2nd would be fine.
Very good. 10 o'clock in this department.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome.
That's it.
Okay, we're talking to a passerby in a Save KPFA t-shirt. It's Thursday, the 29th of July at about 5 o'clock, a little bit before, and we're in the New Leaf parking lot, and this person, suitably enough, is carrying a San Francisco Chronicle with the headline that reads, KPFA staff gets call to return to work. Does this mean everything is okie dokie at KPFA?
Forget it. It's not okie dokie at all. Actually, what I was doing in front of New Leaf was giving flyer for the rally, which is on Saturday. And by the way, the rally is still on.
It's July 31st?
Yeah, July
31st. What time?
Well, it's 11 o'clock in the campus, and otherwise at 1:30 on the little park, which is in Martin Luther King Way. It's really next block to KPFA. They can just go to
but
KPFA.
But you'll be gathering to caravan up to KPFA at 11 o'clock at UCSC?
Yeah, correct. In
where
that famous, what is it called, the Sproul Plaza, I believe is a famous free speech spot.
That's at UC, or UC Berkeley. But
UC Berkeley, yes. There is a carpool from here going.
Just a second.
And what is your name?
My name is Maria.
Maria, you're consulting your...
I'm consulting my flyer.
Yeah. Consulting your flyer. Perhaps if you can give us one of these flyers to pass on.
Definitely, I can.
Excellent.
Give you
help box. Distribute this leaflet.
The whole story, anyway. People who are interested to know more, they can tune into the web of KPFA, which is
www.savepacifica.net. www.savepacifica.net.
Yes. And the story, as it was this morning, is okay. This thing has been proposed to KPFA of returning to work.
without Larry Bensky and Nicole Sawaya.
Oh, I see.
This is a detail which is not on the paper.
It escaped those Chronicle writers, eh?
Exactly.
Of course, Nicole and Larry have been were fired by KPFA for essentially trying to give the public some information about what was really going on there.
Correct. That's the reason. I think it's also a statement from them to say, okay, we give you back the station, but at the same time, remember, we're in power here. Mm-hmm. Also, the thing is that, look at that, they do it just 2 days before the rally. So the idea that is expressed in the web, which is also my opinion, maybe we have to move, is that...
This is our car.
Ah, okay,
We're good.
It's just that they're trying to cool the fire of the listener down, you know. But what is really going on is that with one hand they are offering the station back, mm-hmm. with the other hand they're trying to sell it. And actually in the web there is this letter from the guy which is also on the board of Pacifica. Who is in our side, is in the national member, blah, blah. And he says that this is the main topic of their meetings at the moment. It's not so much, this is a
kind of... How can we get our $75 million and kick everybody out of the station?
Exactly. So if they give it back to us with one hand, but in the other hand they are selling it and opening another station in Palo Alto, you can see that we will be kicked out by somebody else very soon. Another thing is that they're almost bankrupt because they spent $5 million to do this initiative against the people.
You need to pay for these thuggish cops who are in front of the station?
Exactly. They spent so much money that now they don't have money to go on, you know, and so this is one of the reasons. It's not because suddenly they became good and willing to share what they have, you know.
The goon squads ate up most of the dough and now they got to pay the piper, so the best thing to do is to put a happy face on it.
Exactly. So the rally, the most important thing to say to your listeners is the rally is still on, you know, and we want to go there and support KPFA because we love it. That's the main reason. Mm-hmm. And we want Larry Bensky back too, and we want Nicole back too. We don't just want to deliver, what do you call it,
the little token,
yeah, mm-hmm. in order
how
to
sweet, yeah.
yeah, in order. And look what they do just 2 days before the big rally, because this rally now is going to probably be smaller because people will think, oh yeah, that's cool, they're cool now, the problem is solved. It's good that I met you, because I was just going home and thinking, God, what can I do now?
How has the turnout been today? For how long have you been out in front of the New Leaf?
Today I've not been here for so long. It was almost 1.5 hours, but everybody told me the same thing, but it's okay now, you know?
Oh, they did?
Yes.
You told them no?
I told them no. So, good. I'm going to go back there instead of going home.
Don't forget your paper.
I don't forget my
paper. KPFA staff gets called to return to work. Pacifica Foundation lets go in tug of war with station. That does sound to be like a nice media bite, doesn't it?
It is a media bite, so please make sure that people
don't get
the information. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the continued work for KPFA.
Thank you.
Having taken off the pause, I again say we are here at the front of Juice World and at near New Leaf Market talking to
Essene Apostles from Essene Church of Yehoshua and Miriam.
And this is a Judaic church, a Christian church, something else?
Mystical Christian church.
And you, I see you have a companion with you?
Yes, Raphael.
And you gentlemen are looking stylish, a sort of white linen clothing with hemp, excellent. Hemp wear looking perhaps a little warm on such a warm day, but I suppose swimming suits would be frowned upon in this circumstance. What are you up to?
We are up to distributing manuscripts to promote the Essene Church of Christ, the Essene way of life.
I see you have a number.
Here, and we're starting a new congregation of the Essene Church here in Santa Cruz.
And I see you have a number of booklets here. The Essene Gospel of Peace, the Vegetarian Sayings of Jesus the Essene.
And a flyer here.
And a flyer that states, Essene Church in Santa Cruz, first meeting Sunday, August 15th, 11 a.m. free of charge, Loudon Nelson. For more information, call 541-895-2190.
I like this feminine aspect of God part.
We're very much into the feminine aspect of God. We call it the balance between goddess and God. And we believe in the divine feminine aspect as much as we believe in the
what would Moses and Paul say about all that?
Or how about, God the Father Almighty, Jesus his Son, and the presumably male Holy Spirit? that sounds are like entirely
male conclave there.
That are considered to have total control over our religious natures.
But go ahead.
We believe that Miriam, which was known as the mother of Jesus, was just as equal to Jesus himself, and she was the divine feminine coming directly from the begotten.
Do you have a structure of priests and pastors? How does that operate?
Yeah, we have a ministerial training program, and we have a program for bishops in training. We have a master's degree program, and we have just now started an apostleship within our church, and that's what we present, the apostleship.
And there are women who are apostles and women who are priests and
bishops. Yeah, women are treated just as equal as men in our church, and they have the same opportunity. They can be elders, and they can reach the highest degrees within the Essene Church of Christ, just all males.
And how long have you yourself personally been in Santa Cruz?
4 days.
And are you sleeping outside? You indoors?
We sleep wherever we can find a spot every night. Wherever.
You know that Santa Cruz has a law against sleeping outside, the sleeping ban?
No, I didn't know that.
It affects 500 to 1,500 homeless people and makes it a $54 crime to sleep or cover up with blankets after 11 o'clock in a vehicle or outside in the city limits. On all public property and most private property.
That's good to know. No, I didn't know that.
I mentioned it not because I wish to so much as advise you of the law in that way, but as to let you know the obstacles you face if you're concerned, for example, with the plight of people who are poor. I take it that is a concern of yours.
Not really. We just live in the present moment. We don't really worry about any problems. We just...
Don't worry, be happy?
Don't worry, be happy. That's right, yeah.
Look to the lilies of the field. Yes, and,
right.
Or grow on, so to speak.
Yep.
I also remember Mary Magdalene, the mistress to Jesus. You know, she was pretty holy, too.
Anything else you folks want to add before I move on to the more secular aspects of the situation here?
We'll just conclude with it's been great being here, and it's a great town, and the police and everybody have been really positive and warming, you know, towards us, so it's been great.
Thank
that's
you very
so
much.
Far. So far, that's the update.
Knock on air.
Knock on air, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're talking to another individual who is usually reluctant to say anything. You are, in fact, a woman.
Correct.
And you are taking in the afternoon air here in front of the New Leaf?
Absolutely, positively.
And you actually probably have spent a number of hours here, different days, in this particular location?
Most definitely.
What have you observed as far as the police treatment of people in this area?
Moreover, they are, more than not, they are respectful. I think that they do a lot of casing of the scenario here, and the action comes later. So that's basically what they do down here with people.
You haven't seen any, have you seen any instances of what you consider to be police misconduct?
I did see one episode across the street the other day.
Tell me
about
that.
Involving one individual. I was only able to catch a really short glimpse of it, along with Steve Argue, who was able to inform me a little bit about the situation. And
Steve Argue, isn't that the notorious malcontent who police have wisely been trying to arrest at every available opportunity?
Yes, and he was doing his duty that afternoon, watching the police and their actions against this individual.
And what afternoon was this?
I really couldn't tell you for sure. I think it was perhaps last Saturday.
And what happened?
Well, they were searching this young individual to no avail. They didn't find anything. I really don't believe they had a reason to search him or stop him for that matter. So I don't know exactly what started it all.
It's very important for people to remember that, how would you put it? The police have no right to search you, hence do not consent to a search.
Go ahead.
That's what I would say.
Very well put. In a nutshell.
Right. Yes.
So many people don't know these rights. Many people somehow think that if a policeman asks you, you know, can I search you, that they have to immediately spread their legs, lie down, and smile. But that, I'd say, is a misapprehension.
Definite misnomer there. Although, we need to clear that up.
Yes, I would say so. That notorious criminal, is there an officer around? This man is approaching me. I don't know what he's going to do next. What is your name, sir?
Steve Argy.
Ah! Keep away from me now. I thought you were in jail.
No, but they do have my picture up in the police station.
Well, you're an attractive man, wouldn't you say?
Oh, surely.
There you go.
Thank you.
Of course, I too am extremely good looking, but we're not going to get into that at this time. Have you, again, succeeded in going through a 24-hour period without an arrest or confiscation of your property?
24 hours, yes. Actually, they still have a large amount of my property with my car and just about everything I own in it. But I'm getting a loan, and I should be able to get that out.
So you're going to pay the ransom to get your vehicle, which is in fact your home, out of the confiscation of police department?
I wouldn't say it's my home right now. I've been staying at people's places.
But different times you have, in fact, used it as a place to live?
Right, and it's storing most of my stuff, so I mean I don't have a place to unpack it at this point.
Your
anyway.
Subversive literature,
paintings, original poetry.
Secret phone numbers of conspirators?
No.
Just fishing here. Massive amounts of drugs, of course.
No.
Sorry about that, officer. I couldn't get that information out of him. Anyway, as I understand it, nearly a week ago, today is Thursday. It was last Thursday on the 22nd of July. Was that a week ago? No, it wasn't quite. Yes, it was a week ago.
It was a week ago.
You were approached by an officer, Martin, who wrapped you four times, shoved you four times, and then put you into handcuffs and took you off to jail on a charge of obstructing an officer. How could you be so mean?
Actually, he took me off to jail without any charge. You know, he didn't even know what to charge me at that time. In fact, people demanded to know what I was being charged with, and one of the cops said, "Well, he's not being arrested. He's being detained."
Detained, yes.
which there's no difference, but they were just, throwing something out there.
There is a difference in the sense that detention is something, by the way, for all you folks out there who are being told you're being detained, is something they do on reasonable suspicion that their crime has been committed, that you are somehow connected with it. So if you are being detained, the appropriate thing to say is, what crime are you investigating and why do you feel I might have something to do with it? Please give me the specifics. If they decline to do that, then in any future, you may then choose to walk away. Of course, at that point, they may charge you with...
Of course, I was already in handcuffs, so it was...
Walking away in handcuffs, stealing the handcuffs, perhaps, what they would charge you with.
Yeah,
confiscating the cuffs.
Probably tackle me down and beat the shit out of me and pepper spray me. And
all in a day's work for young Steve Argue here on the Mall in Santa Cruz. And certainly a subject of some amusement to city council members who have heard this story, but apparently done very little about it.
Well, they've done nothing about it, as they've done nothing about the fact that I spent 4 days in jail for selling newspapers, as they've done nothing about the fact that their police got out of hand at a peaceful, legal demonstration against the war in which five people are facing charges, including myself, where I'm facing a possible 4 years in prison.
The infamous Santa Cruz Five.
Right. And to expect them to do... I mean... Well, I expect them to do something, but it doesn't mean they're going to do it. I mean, they're
going on vacation.
They've been on vacation. They've been on a...
Out to lunch, perhaps.
Out to lunch. They should realize by now, if they don't get their cops on a short leash, this is going to cost them a lot of money in terms of lawsuits. It's costing them a lot in terms of credibility, their credibility, the credibility of their police, and it's hurting their system, the harassment that's coming down against me and others. Yesterday, David Wilson, was arrested over at the farmer's market.
An African-American who spoke out at city council regarding the needle exchange issue.
He spoke out the day before he was arrested at the farmer's market for no reason again. He was held for 4 hours and then charged with being in a drug area.
The farmer's market, a known avocado and tobacco area, yes.
Right, and this is supposedly something having to do with his parole, but his parole mentions, or his probation, but his probation mentions nothing about being in drug areas, let alone where those drug areas are. So this is another false arrest and more police repression taking place. And
apparently five police officers added to Officer, was it Bynes, who was the woman who was present? Officer Bynes was the individual who you saw, I guess, a week ago, giving a rather questionable detention to a man for a check he had, which turned out to be completely legitimate and which there had been no complaint about, except her own curiosity. And that was the instance in which you were handcuffed, dragged off to jail, and charged with another misdemeanor, right?
Right. And Officer Swanick was the officer that arrested David last night, and Swanick was the one who gave me a jaywalking ticket on Tuesday. Not Tuesday this week, but Tuesday last week. And, you know, when I got that jaywalking ticket, he wanted to know my name, and I said, well, you know my name, you wouldn't be doing this if you didn't know my name. And he said, yeah, I just need to know how to spell it. Do you spell Steven with a V or a PH?
How do you spell bullshit SCPD? That's really a new spelling, but not an unusual spelling. Steve, anything coming up that people might want to hear about or know about?
Yeah, well, next week at the farmer's market, there's going to be a whole bunch of us coming down. We're going to do mass flyering starting at 4:30. Actually, I'm going to start flyering probably before then, but 4:30, a lot of us are going to be there.
First farmer's market in August.
Yeah, and we're going to be doing that just to talk to people, go around and talk to people, get flyers in people's hands about what's been happening in terms of the police repression here. And then we're going to have a speak out at 6 o'clock. People are going to speak out about what's been going on, and people can come and listen to that. That's going to be at the farmer's market as well.